Welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Here's an update on the weather. Currently 37 degrees here in Baltimore, 34 degrees in Frederick. We can expect some rain showers beginning in about an hour or so. That'll turn to snow for a little bit tonight. Tomorrow's going to be pretty clear. Sunday will also be pretty clear. Sunday night going into Monday, there is at the moment 100% chance of some snow. We should have some accumulation at that point. We will, of course, keep you up to date here on WIPR. The 118th Congress closed about an hour ago, and at this hour, the 119th Congress is scheduled to begin with the election of a speaker of the House. Republicans hold the narrowest majority in the House in 100 years. If the current speaker, Mike Johnson, is to be reelected, he can afford to lose only one vote. Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky has stated publicly that he plans to vote against Johnson. Punchbowl News reports this morning that President-elect Donald Trump has been lobbying another holdout, conservative Texas Congressman Chip Roy, on behalf of the speaker. Roy is negotiating to be named the chair of the powerful Rules Committee. So it's possible that Johnson will lose his speakership today or at some point over the weekend. One of the Republicans who may oppose Johnson is Andy Harris, the first district congressman from Maryland, who's now the chair of the Freedom Caucus. The three members of the Maryland delegation, Sarah Elfrith, Johnny Olszewski Jr., and April McLean Delaney, will cast a vote or votes for speaker, but they can't be sworn into office until a speaker is elected. So there's a chance that their official tenures and their paychecks actually won't begin today. With Democrats all expected to vote for Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries as speaker, one way Johnson can be reelected on the first vote is if a few members of the Republican caucus vote present. That would lower the threshold for a majority, but until a vote is called, the magic number for Johnson is 218, rather. Stay tuned throughout the afternoon to WIPR for updates from Capitol Hill in the hourly newscasts from NPR. Today on Midday, it's Midday at the Movies with our good buddies Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, and Max Weiss, the editor-in-chief of Baltimore Magazine. They get my vote on the first vote and any substantial and subquent ballots thereafter.
Vote present.
There you go. Voting present. Okay. Well, then now winning a majority is even easier. You don't even need both me and Jed.
Does that leave me as speaker?
Okay. Jed, you're speaker now. Yeah.
That's right. Well, you know, we're keeping an eye on what's going on up on Capitol Hill, but let's take a look at what happened in movie theaters over the course of 2024. The annual domestic box office ends up at about $8.75 billion. That's down a little bit, about 3% from 2023. This is according to a group called ComScore and reported in the Associated Press. So it's down from 2023, but it's certainly up from the COVID period. But we're not quite back to pre-COVID levels, are we?
Well, it depends on how you account for the beginning of the year, because the beginning of the year was so weak because of the actor strike and leftover COVID effect. 3% is a big win, I would say. The summer looked weak when it started. I mean, it really looked like a disaster on one of our shows. And I think, from my own experience going to movies, theaters are full. I mean, it's fun being back in movie theaters. I always argue, even if they're not full, but it's really great. And I think the streaming services are wanting more football games.
Yeah, right. Because football games are certainly no problem. People did not have problem finding Netflix and finding Beyonce at the halftime of the Ravens game on Christmas Day. I mean, but Max, I mean, before the pandemic, they were doing $11 billion a year. Now they're doing, just under $9 billion. $2 billion is a lot less money, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it was already trending in that direction because of streaming and because of the way people consume entertainment. Then during COVID, I think people became even less accustomed to going out into the theater and having that collective experience. Some of them probably improved their home entertainment systems so that they can just hunker down. But I think one of the big reasons why this year is not as good as last year is because last year had the Barbenheimer effect.
Mm-hmm.
This year, the wealth has been spread around a little bit more. A lot of films have done well. Wicked certainly was, you know, one of the great success stories of the year. But then there was an absolute bomb that they were expecting to do well, which was the Joker Folie à Deux. You know, the original Joker was a huge, huge hit. You figure that plus Lady Gaga, you can't lose. And they lost. So you know, the box office has been relatively healthy. I don't think we're ever going to get back to where we were. So we just need to manage our expectations, basically.
I mean, as bodies and seats go, the number from the 60s to pre-COVID went from 4 to 5 billion. 4 to 5 million, you know, sort of fluctuating on how good the movies were. So I think we're sort of back into that category now.
And we're going to have fewer movies in 2025 because of the writer's strike. We've talked about that. I mean, fewer things were greenlit, fewer things were produced. I mean, Warner Brothers, I think Mr. Zaslav, the guy who heads that company, they shot an entire Batgirl movie. They edited it. They put the music on it. They put the credits on it. It was ready to go in theaters. And he said, nope, we're not going to release it. And they took the tax write-off. It was like a better deal for Warner Brothers to take a tax write-off on how many hundreds of millions of dollars they spent on the movie. So it's that kind of stuff. I mean, when I talk to the people that I know, you know, just very on the margins of the movie business and the TV streaming business, they say that just a lot fewer things are being greenlit, that it's a lot harder for writers and producers and showrunners to get shows made. So there's going to be fewer movies released this year.
Well, and the studios have been on a trend for several decades now to invest more dollars in fewer movies because they want things that are going to generate huge dollars. I mean, now $100 million opening weekend isn't that exciting to people. And, you know, that's a different business model. Fortunately, in the whole movie business, everybody making movies, there are a lot of things below that level that are, I would say, cooking. I mean, I am looking at the Sundance lineup.
One of the things that, as a result of the writer's strike, that drives me nuts is not related to film, but to television, with, like, there'll be so much time between seasons of a show. Like, there was that show Severance, which I really liked a lot. Ben Stiller created the show. And I guess season two is coming out soon. I have zero recollection of season one. Like, I'm going to need a half an hour primer on what happened with season one. And this is, you know, it used to be, remember, back in the day, there'd be a show, they'd take the summer off, they'd come back. Now it's like 2 years later.
No, and my brilliant friend, the same way,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so like previously on Severance, the lead actor was 16 years old. He's now 46. But, you know, the quality of movies that we had in 2024, I mean, this year the Oscar race is going to be tight, it seems. We had some very, very good movies. So, Max, you have a list of some of your favorites of 2024.
Yes.
And listeners, before we hear from Max and Jed about that, we'd love to hear from you as well. What did you see in 2024 that you think definitely should have a place at the Golden Globes table, the Oscar table, etc.? 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. We'd love to hear what you have on your list. So, Max, what do you think?
My number one film of the year was Anora. I just absolutely loved it. And Sean Baker, the director, I just think he's amazing. He's the one who did Florida Project and Red Rocket and Tangerine. And he shows us people, often sex workers or sort of people living.
This is a sex worker who marries the son of a Russian oligarch.
Yes.
And then chaos ensues.
Chaos ensues. Like, for a little while, you get swept up in this romance. Like, you really think you're seeing Pretty Woman. And then reality kind of sets in. But it's a strange film to watch because it fluctuates in tone. One minute you're sort of giddy and involved in this romance. One minute you're scared for the life of the main character. You're laughing. And then at the end, you know, you feel kind of crushed by the whole thing. And it's so well modulated. And Mikey Madison is absolutely stunning as Honora, the lead character,
she's the
sex
lead.
Worker. Mm-hmm. And she's actually the front runner to win the Oscar, which would be quite an astonishing accomplishment for an actress who people don't even know, you know, people didn't know her name last year. They may still not know her name.
Yeah, and your second on your list is Conclave.
Yes.
So you go from a sex worker to an election for a pope.
Right.
That shows a wide range, Max.
Thank you.
I'm proud
of
you.
I contain multitudes. Yeah. I mean, when I heard about this movie, about the election of a pope, I literally, like, yawned.
Yeah,
I just thought, that sounds so boring. But it's an absolute cracker. I mean, it's just fast-paced, and it's filled with intrigue and all sorts of ambitious people plotting against each other. And, you know, Ralph Fiennes, who is actually my favorite actor, it just kind of grounds the whole thing. He's brilliant. You just cannot believe how catty these popes are, these cardinals are. And it's just an exciting thriller. Really one of the most entertaining films of the year.
Yeah, really, because I put that when I'm like you, and I haven't seen the movie yet, but I intend to. I mean, that when the subject matter comes up, I thought I would rather watch the Miracle-Gro commercial of grass growing in somebody's yard. I mean, really, it just seemed...
It just goes to tell you,
you know. Politics and church, they've been going together for quite a long time.
It's a grab for power, basically, mm-hmm. you know, and that's always going to be fun to see people battling for, you know, for the top spot.
Right, and your third choice is
Thelma!
You really like Thelma.
I just adored Thelma. I just thought it was so much...
This is the older lady who gets scammed, right?
June Squibb, she gets scammed. We watch it happen as though in slow motion. It's a guy calling, claiming to be her beloved grandson, and he needs money right away, and you're like, no, Thelma, no. But then she finds out that she was scammed, and she decides that she's going to go after the scammer. And because she has a restless spirit, she doesn't like being the old lady who can't drive. She wants to go on adventures. She loves Tom Cruise and Mission Impossible. And so she recruits a friend of hers, played by the late Richard Roundtree, and the two of them go off to find the person who scammed her. You never feel like her life is in danger. It's not really scary. It's not overly cutesy and whimsical. Mm. It's in that perfect sweet spot where it's adorable and funny and exciting, but it's never kind of cavity-inducing. And June Squibb is great, and her family is chasing after her, and I just had such a great time with this movie.
Very good. So 1, 2, 3 for Max: Honora, Conclave, and Thelma. And Jed, as a great advocate and influencer when it comes to independent films, it is... not atypical that your list includes a bunch of movies I have never heard of. And I got to tell you, occasionally I listen to Midday at the Movies here on WYPR. I mean, I have been known to listen to that program. But you have The Bike Riders. We may have talked about that on the
briefly.
Air once.
Yeah. And it didn't do much business. I think it's a story about the birth of MAGA in a totally respectful, interesting way. I mean, it's what Democrats talk about. Well, I guess both sides talk about this all the time, trying to figure out the other person. And I think this movie shows us the other person, not as a hateful Nazi, but as somebody who likes motorcycles, who sees motorcycles as a way to bond with buddies. And
they're hateful Nazis on the side?
No. Well, actually, later in the movie, there is a Nazi flag comes into play, and that gets addressed. But I just think it's one of these rare things that movies can do, where you really get to see a group of people, the likes of which maybe you don't hang out with, mm-hmm. at
a character
time,
study,
at a time that goes back a little bit, and you see something be born in America that's a real thing. Motorcycle clubs are a real thing now.
And your second favorite movie, this is great, Jed. This is Jed Dietz, the movie aficionado, the guy who is there for independent filmmakers, has picked a movie with no dialogue that no one has ever heard of, called Sasquatch Sunset. This is your second favorite film of the year. No Barbenheimer for you, huh?
Well, sounds like you just made that up, basically.
I like Barbenheimer.
We have to fact check whether to see Sasquatch Sunset is an actual movie.
Well, I will tell you that when David Zellner introduced this movie at last year's Sundance, and he and his brother co-directed it, Nathan, who is in it, although I didn't know that because everybody's in these ridiculous Sasquatch costumes that are in the movie. Jesse Eisenberg, Riley Keough, really good cast, and Nathan Zellner. When David introduced it at Sundance, he introduced it as the best archaeological exploration of the Sasquatch. And the audience at Sundance, there was a little bit of chuckling, and then people were sort of looking around like, is he serious? And he didn't smile or anything. And I think that is, in fact, what he's trying to show you in the movie, is this sort of different world. And, of course, they grunt. There's no spoken words. They sort of joke with each other. They get angry. They get frustrated. They get scared. And it's the sound design is incredible in the movie. It's really a good movie.
Okay. See, I'm going to not take my own advice, because I was just saying, even if you think you won't like Conclave, go see Conclave. This sounds terrible, Jed. I'm going to probably avoid
right.
it.
I'm sorry, Max.
I'm sorry.
I'm with you, too. I mean, you know, maybe we shouldn't elect a speaker
so
after
you're
all.
Saying,
here,
you're saying there's a lot of grunting. Well,
while watching the movie, I kept thinking, 20 minutes in, I thought, I love these guys. David and Nathan Zellner have been in Baltimore a bunch of times. They had things at the festival. They're quintessential indie filmmakers in the best sense, unpretentious, wonderful guys, et cetera, et cetera. 20 minutes in, I thought, is this really going to last for the length of the feature film?
Three minutes into this conversation, that's what I'm thinking about this movie. No way it could last.
So. Well, I would say try it.
All right, try it. And your third one, we're going to do this real quick, and then we're going to go to Sam, who's on the line in Baltimore. Love Lies Bleeding, right? This is a reclusive gym manager who falls for somebody in the gym. So we did talk about this one.
We did talk about it briefly, and it got some real attention. Kristen Stewart's in it, who I think I'm putting her in the Ralph Fiennes category. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen her make a false step in a movie, going back to being a teenager in one old Barry Levinson movie, you know.
I would argue with you. I think she's a good actress. I know we have a call coming, but she makes excellent choices. I think her range is limited, but she's got great taste, and that helps a lot.
I would agree with that part and disagree with, I think she, you know, everybody's got some range limits, but
not Ralph Fiennes. Okay.
Not Meryl Streep. We have those two, but everybody else has some limits.
Yeah.
But I think she's a terrific actress.
Yeah, I like her
woman,
too.
You know, I thought the Reichert movie, I thought it was an obscure movie.
Love that movie.
Yeah, she's fantastic in it.
Yeah, she is.
In this one, too.
Yeah.
Love Lies Bleeding. Okay, let's go to Sam. He's on the line in Baltimore. Sam, what was your fave of 2024?
Hey, guys. Happy New Year. One of my faves of 2024 came at the right time for me is Dee Dee. It was a coming-of-age movie. I'm a 32-year-old millennial, so everything of that culture, the West Coast culture, the skateboarding, the videos, the little MySpace iPod era. Yeah. But also, I lost my mother back in 2023, and the scenes with him and his mom hit me so hard, I busted out crying in the movie theater. And I ended up crying so much into the next scene, I was a little embarrassed. But I think it was just amazing, just a son-mother relationship. Mother trying to do everything that she can for her children, and the kids, of course, not understanding, but it hit right home for me. It was an amazing, amazing picture for me.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm so sorry about your mom, but that's great. So that's Dee Dee.
Thank you.
And you saw it up in Owings Mills this year. Okay, well, thank you, Sam. Happy New Year.
Good choice.
I appreciate it. Yep.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. Jed Dietz is the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. Max Weiss is the editor-in-chief of Baltimore Magazine. We'll talk some more about favorite movies from 2024, and we'll hear from you on that score, 410-662-8780, or email midday@wipr.org. We'll also talk about a few of the flicks that are in theaters this very weekend. I'm Tom Hall. Stick around.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
And welcome. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up Monday here on Midday, it's the Midday Health Watch with former Baltimore City Health Commissioner Dr. Lena Wen. There's a vaccine for bird flu. It's awaiting approval, but the Biden administration has chosen so far not to move forward with that approval. So as of today, there have been nearly 60 human cases of bird flu reported in 7 different states, not Maryland, but 7 others. Will the U.S. be able to respond if the infection spreads? So we'll talk about it with Dr. Wen. Plus, as State Senator Jill Carter prepares to leave the Maryland legislature, we'll talk about what progressives should prioritize in this year's General Assembly. So that's on the way here Monday on Midday. And if you've just joined us today, it's Midday at the Movies. Max Weiss is here. She's a pop culture critic and the editor-in-chief of Baltimore Magazine. Jed Dietz is here as well. He's the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. You are welcome to join us. What did you see in 2024 that you liked? What are you looking forward to catching here in 2025? 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.com. org. So, Max, back to your list of faves for 2024. I'm not taking these in order. Well, okay. Your number 4 is A Real Pain.
Yes.
And I hear great things about that movie. We've talked about it. Again, I have not seen any of these movies because, as longtime listeners of the show know, I live a pathetic life and never get out. So
the last film you saw was Love Actually.
Exactly. and so I'm glad you mentioned it because I love that movie. But this is the Jesse Eisenberg,
yes.
Kieran Culkin
movie. So Jesse Eisenberg wrote it and directed it, and he stars in it. And the most brilliant thing he did was cast Kieran Culkin as his foil,
yes.
because they have two such different personalities, and the way they bounce off of each other is truly fascinating. And they play cousins who go to Poland. They want to find the home of their grandmother. And the Kieran Culkin character is struggling in his life. And it's partly because he's like this extreme empath. He just feels too much. And what do you do with somebody who sort of takes on all the suffering of the world? It sounds heavy. It actually has a lot of humor, incredible insight. And these two actors are so brilliant together. Kieran Culkin is almost a lock to win Best Supporting Actor. And I support that. I think that's a great choice.
Yeah, that's great. And another one on Max's list, Jed, is Will and Harper, which I did actually see in the comfort of my own home. And that was a really interesting movie. This is Will Ferrell. It's a documentary about his friend who transitions from man to woman, is living now as a woman, Harper, a former writer on Saturday Night Live. That's how they met. And it's a road movie. It's a buddy movie with Will Harper, or with Will Ferrell and a trans woman.
I agree with you. I think it's a terrific movie. And it comes from such an interesting place because when Will Harper was the head writer at Saturday Night Live, he really protected Ferrell, who was a new cast member, and a bunch of people couldn't quite get him. You know, they weren't quite sure. You know, I mean, nobody saw the great legend that he's become in comedy at that point. And this guy stuck up for him and said, "Let's write stuff for him, and you'll see, he's good." And when he got this email from his old friend about his transition to female, Will Ferrell called him and said, which was sent to many people, I mean, a bunch of friends, and with trusting that they would sort of take a deep breath and then react. And Will Ferrell contacted him right away. He remembered he liked to hitchhike and bum around the country. And he said, "Let's go on a trip." And that's where this movie comes from. And he put together a little crew. Will Ferrell probably could gather a small crew pretty easily, and that's what the movie is. And you learn a lot.
And they drive around for 2 weeks, and it's a touching movie.
I love how open-hearted the film is.
Yeah.
You know, Will Ferrell is not freaked out. He's not scared. He's curious. He wants to learn more about his friend. He wants to reacquaint himself with her. And it's a very empathic and generous film, while also being very funny, because it's Will Ferrell. And to me, it just sort of felt like the film we all need right now. Don't be scared of the other. Don't be scared of what you don't know. Ask questions, learn, have an open heart. And that's what this film is about. And that's why I love it. But again, I'm making it sound really sentimental. It's not. It's just, it's very funny and sharp. And yes, you will cry like a baby eventually, but you'll laugh a lot too.
Yeah, I did both. That's for sure. And, Jed, one of the movies on your list for 2024 is the movie, the documentary about Luther Vandross, which I think just aired again on CNN a night or two ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, great singer. And did they do a good job with this movie?
They do a fantastic job with this movie. Don Porter is a really good documentary filmmaker who comes out of broadcast journalism. I mean, she's not trained that way, but she did a wonderful movie called Trapped. She did one about the Legal Aid Society called Gideon's Army at the very beginning of her career. I think the first feature film she made. She's just a terrific filmmaker, and she got access to this unbelievable archive that Sony now controls of his music and film footage. And this guy, you know, I think probably everybody in the audience has heard of Luther Vandross. He was, you know, he had big hit songs and stuff like that, wrote for other people. But I didn't know any of the detail of this movie. I've seen it with two big audiences, one at Sundance last year, one here at the Maryland Film Festival, where it was the opening night this past spring. And people here sang along with the movie quite beautifully. And that's sort of what the movie brings out. And Dawn has captured the build of a career that and it's told a story that a lot of people are not going to know the details of. It's really great, plus great music.
Yeah, and speaking of great music and great singers and great songwriters, there's a movie about Bob Dylan that's out these days. It's in theaters now. It's called A Complete Unknown. Let's listen to a little clip. This is a scene that features Pete Seeger, who's played by Edward Norton from Columbia, Maryland, and Bob Dylan, who is played by, all accounts, stunningly, by Timothy Chalamet.
I absolutely love your music. I'm such a big fan, Mr. Seeger.
Pete. Harold's putting the lean on you there? He's trying to get you to play?
Yeah, a little bit.
All right, well, don't hold it against them. It's for a good cause. Want to use this beauty?
They always keep it handy, huh, Pete? He's like a gunfighter with a six-gun. He's keeping it close.
Oh, the time will come up when the winds will stop and the breeze will cease to be breathing. Like the stillness in the wind for the hurricane begins. The hour that the ship comes in and the seas will split and the ship will hit and the sands on the shoreline will be shaking and the tide will sound and the wind will pound. And the morning will be breaking.
It's Timothy Chalamet playing Bob Dylan, Edward Norton playing Pete Seeger, singing their own voices. This is not dubbed in with the original people. But, Max, I've heard terrific things about this movie. And you're a musician, too. So, yep. You know, just this movie seems to work.
I love the choice of singing live. That was something that Timothy Chalamet really wanted to do, and James Mangold, the director, to give it that rawness, because that's the thing about Dylan. There was a rawness to his vocals and his performance. There was a vitality to it that you just can't recreate in a studio. So they did all of the singing live. Chalamet is excellent, but I do want to focus a little bit on Norton as Pete Seeger. Mm. He will just break your heart, because he's sort of watching the culture pass him by in the form of this talented young man. And you just sort of see the heartbreak in his face as he, and it's not quite Salieri and Mozart, because Seeger obviously was a formidable talent in his own right, but he came from this very earnest place, and here comes the counterculture and this young genius played by Chalamet, and it is just, it really focuses on this relationship. It's the heart of the film, and it really makes the film something special.
410-662-8780 if you have a movie you'd like to recommend to our listeners. Our email, midday@wipr.org. So I want to play a clip from another movie that's gotten a lot of hype, a lot of talk. It's a Nicole Kidman movie. It's called Baby Girl, and it's just out. I think it opened on Christmas Day. Let's listen to a little bit, and then we'll talk about it on the other side.
Hey. Hey, we need to have a conversation. You're very young. I don't want to hurt you.
I think I have power over you. Because I could make one call and you lose everything. Does that turn you on when I say that?
get that dog to calm down.
Good girl.
Yeah, I gave it a cookie.
You always have cookies on you.
Why, do you want one?
Being a CEO means being a nurturer and a collaborator.
Guns.
No! What?
Is that what you want?
I don't know. I mean, I even just listening to the trailer, it kind of seems almost like a Saturday Night Live parody. I mean, I love Nicole Kidman. I think she's an excellent actor in every way. But I don't know. This one, I haven't seen it. So, but you saw it, Jed. And yeah. I've talked to two other friends who saw it. And I'll admit, they influenced my skepticism because they didn't like it.
It was hard to get through for me. I mean, it's just, it's super repetitive. I mean, it's the same thing over and over and over again. The cuckolded husband, just to give you an idea of how credible this movie is Antonio Banderas. Yeah, everybody.
Easy to walk away from him.
Oh, sure. I mean, everybody's looking for an affair with Antonio Banderas. That's what they're, I just think it's about nothing. And I love the people in it. I think Nicole Kidman is one of our great actresses who is, you know, stretched and is fearless. You know, she's the Eyes Wide Shut stuff with Tom Cruise, I thought was incredible. Virginia Woolf was incredible. This is a waste of her, I think.
And Max, you have that Jed, you ignorant slut look
SMH
on your face.
Shaking my head. I absolutely love this movie. And the Antonio Banderas of it all is important. He is this evolved, nurturing husband who wants to have gentle lovemaking, and she's into the kinky stuff. She wants S&M. And this young intern, so she owns this big shipping company, and this young intern, played by Harris Dickinson, who's amazing, he kind of intuitively sees that this is what she's looking for. She wants that kind of relationship. And he offers it to her. Now, it's not like a 50 Shades of Grey. It's more like, It's very sex positive. It's like he understands that this is what she's looking for in a sexual relationship. And it's ironic that her husband is almost too nice a guy to want to engage in this. So I just thought that it really talks about the way people are intimate with each other, how they can communicate their desires. It's about shame and how terrible it is to live with shame and how much better it would be to not do what we call kink shaming. And it's sexy. It's a sexy film.
What do you
film.
Mean? Something we call kink shaming. I've never heard of kink shaming.
Okay, first of all, you have to...
call kink shaming.
Okay, you have to read... It's funny you mentioned this. You have to read my review at BaltimoreMagazine.com. Shameless plug. But I talk about this phrase. This is something that the Gen Z has come up with. It's basically like, be accepting. If two people are consensual, then just don't shame them. Whatever they're into, let them be into
it. Well, I'm for that. Okay. I just didn't realize there was a term for it.
Well, then don't kink shame. Okay. Right. So, but Nicole Kidman is essentially kink shaming herself, right? And it's about how
well, don't we all at some point in our lives?
Well, especially us old people, you know, the younger generation, they're more evolved. They get it. So anyway, I think it's about so much. And I think the performances are electrifying. And one thing I want to say about Nicole Kidman is, I was so wrong about her. Like, I remember Moulin Rouge, which is a film that I did not like, which could be a whole other show one day. But, and I thought, she's too much of an ice queen. She's too beautiful. She's too remote. And that's just not the case at all. She has, as Jed says, has given some fearless performances. She sort of lets it all hang out. She played an abused spouse in that mini series on Showtime. And she just is so raw and so vulnerable. Big Little Lies, sorry, I couldn't think of it. She's so raw and so vulnerable and sexy in this, and all the acting is phenomenal, and I recommend it highly.
All right, there we go. Well, folks are going to just have to go out to the Charles Theater and check it out and see what they think, you know? It's also at the Senate. Oh, no, it's not at the Senator.
Charles.
It's at the Charles Theater.
Yeah.
We got time for one more, and I want to hear a little bit. This is a trailer from The Fire Inside. This is a movie about boxing, I guess, right? So here's The Fire Inside.
It's way bigger than boxing, Russ.
So it's going to be up to you to show who Clarissa Shields really is.
If I'm training for the second gold medal, I'm gonna need exactly what the man get.
Is it the money? Is it the recognition?
Money is recognition.
This ain't just about me. This is for all the women.
Folks around here know that if Clarissa Shields can do it, they can too.
You've seen more in your 16 years than most people seen in their entire lifetime. I want you to take that fire inside of you and turn it into something good.
Hey, yo, you represent out there. So what we do with it, Flint.
So there's a movie about Clarissa Shields, and who boxed as T-Rex Shields. She's from Flint, Michigan, and she was the first woman in her country's history to win an Olympic gold medal, right, in boxing. That's very
well. She's
but this isn't a documentary. This is a narrative.
Yeah, this is narrative. But she is the first American boxer of either gender to win consecutive gold medals in the Olympics, 2012 and 2016. It's an amazing story written by Barry Jenkins, Moonlighting and Medicine for Melancholy, that we had at the festival, a great filmmaker in his own right. And this story, she comes out of Flint, Michigan, which in this movie reminds me some of Baltimore. I've never been to Flint, but there's a kind of grit that I think we proudly own here in Baltimore. And the story with her coach Crutchfield and what they accomplish, and she's still fighting. She's dominated in many weight classes. She's an incredible athlete, and she chose boxing, which is not a great fit for the PR people with women and boxing, but she's really, really good, dedicated, and very dominant in the sport. It's an incredible movie.
It sounds like a great story. Max, what'd you think?
No, I also really liked it a lot. And this is a tiny spoiler, but not too much of one. The film has an unusual trajectory because she gets to the Olympics, and you're following her relationship with her coach and her training and her family. And then she wins the gold medal, and you look at your clock, at your watch, and it's an hour and 5 minutes into the film. So what's going to happen?
Stuff has to keep happening.
And what happens basically is, I mean, let's face it. Do you know who Clarissa Shields is?
No.
Right. So she does not become, she goes to the store, she sees Michael Phelps on the Wheaties box, and they are having a really hard time marketing her, and she does not become rich. Like she was saying to her family, I'm going to buy you a new house, I'm going to this and that once I win the gold. And it's sort of like that thing of like happily ever after when the film, like the romance ends, when the couple kisses and they live. This is the reality of she wins the gold, you have that incredible catharsis. And then what really happens after that is what makes this film so special. That and the performances and, you know, as Jed said, the grit of it all. It's really something special.
Yeah, she's a black woman. And, Michael Phelps was not either of those things. He was a great champion, but, you know, that's certainly got it.
Well, and her coach is not a PR guy. You know, he does. When she wins the gold, he's thrilled for her. I mean, he's helped her get there. They are bound like family members. And he doesn't know what to do. He tries hard, and she is ripped that this is not working out, and holds everybody accountable, including herself. And that was what Max said is exactly right. The movie takes off after she wins the gold medal.
Yeah, and this film is just not getting the attention it deserves. It has not gotten the promotion it deserves. I think it's a film that people will really like.
I mean, I saw it with an audience that was totally transfixed by this movie.
Just a great boxing film, but it also really tells the story of Flint, Michigan, and the people there and how much she meant to them. And it's not judgmental of its character. She definitely came from a rough background, but it shows grace towards her mother, who is an addict, and her father, who is in prison, and it has a lot of compassion. It's really good stuff.
All right, so it's The Fire Inside, and it's at the Charles Theater here in Baltimore. Yeah, all right, we're going to give Joseph the last word. He's an emailer who says, I see around 2 to 3 movies a week. Whoa. So he's a real aficionado. My favorite was Conclave, so he's with you, Max, on
nice,
that
Joseph.
One. Joseph says, I found it gripping, suspenseful, and that shocking ending. He also enjoyed Problemista, National Anthem, My Old Ass, and The Substance, and Juror Number 2. So he had
very
a long list of things, you know, very interesting.
Yeah, that's a diverse group and a lot of great stuff. Juror Number 2, you can now watch on demand. Clint Eastwood's latest film, just a traditional thriller, the kind that they used to make back in the 90s, you know, like Primal Fear. You know, very good stuff.
Good stuff. All right. Well, we always talk about good stuff with good people. So thank you for coming around, and Happy New Year. We'll
Thanks
see
for
you
having
next
us.
Time.
Happy New Year.
Max Weiss is the pop culture critic and editor-in-chief at Baltimore Magazine. Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. Coming up on the other side of a quick break, Midday Theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins me with a review of Summer 1976. That's at the Studio Theater in Washington. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.